Constitutional Abuses, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Very good to be back with you in the studio. Another privilege we don't get very often, but here we are. And hopefully it'll be a little better sounding on the air, as it always is when we record it in studio rather than over Skype.
Well, absolutely. You know, Chuck, there are a lot of things that are going on in our culture today, a lot of issues that I really wish we had the time and ability to cover on this program, but alas, only being 15 minutes a day, you have to kind of pick and choose. But what I wanted to do for this week is for us to look at the whole idea of constitutional abuses. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I know only 1 week of this is actually paying short shrift, because we could probably go for the next 2 or 3 years years every day of listing some new constitutional abuse that's happened somewhere in our country, either by our federal government or by officers of our government doing stupid things. Well, we've got some pretty good ones this week.
Well, look, when the Consolidated Federal Register takes up something like 30 feet of shelf space.
Yes, we can find quite a bit of constitutional abuse there.
And in fact, that means also, the real sad part about that is that means whether you think so or not, you're a criminal in some way or another.
That is absolutely the implication. And we haven't even started discussing all of the new rules and regulations that are going to be unleashed upon the American people by this current administration because of Obamacare and the fiscal cliff deal and all of the other things that are waiting in the wings to start this session of Congress. Chuck, it just boggles your mind, but one of the things that really I think is one of the most egregious aspects of constitutional illiteracy among our elected officials and those agents who work for them, i.e., all of the ones who enforce the laws and who carry out the lawsuits, things of that nature, is the fact, again, with this one, we have the Obama administration through the Department of Justice, which should be renamed the Department of Injustice or the Department of Justice to those whom we give preference to.
Selective Justice.
So the Department of Selective Justice. I like that. We're going to start calling it instead of the DOJ, the DSJ.
Yes.
Department of Selective Justice. So the Department of Selective Justice, right before the end of the year, and ladies and gentlemen, you may have heard a little bit about this, but we want to go into a little bit more detail about this. In the fall, the Obama administration actually got sued over some of the Obamacare mandate issues, specifically the paying for abortion coverage and the mandated health insurance that companies would have to provide for their employees under this scheme that's unconstitutional. And David Green, who is a self-made man, he is a multi-billionaire, Charles. Now, again, before people start saying boo hiss, he's the part of the rich and we need to soak the rich. He's part of the 1%. No, actually, David's really kind of part of the 99%, if you want to break that up, because he's your average humble guy. Now, this average humble guy, you may have heard of him before, especially if you or your family like doing hobbies and crafts, because he started a little company called Hobby Lobby. Now, most people know Hobby Lobby. They're pretty ubiquitous throughout the country. They're all over the place. They're sort of like the McDonald's of the arts and crafts world, I think. And they have a distinctive. And it's similar to our friends over at Chick-fil-A. They're a Christian-owned company. They run their company based on Christian principles, including, just like Chick-fil-A, they are not open on days of Sabbath observance, so they do not open on Sundays. And they decided to take the Obama administration to court, their company did, over this mandate that would force them, against their religious beliefs, to provide coverage for abortifacients in their insurance that they pay their employees.
And well, not just abortifacients, but also abortions.
Well, yes, and abortions as well. That's right. But basically, their claim was that it was a denial of the free exercise of their religion. Now, that's not necessarily a novel claim, Charles. There have been others, including, I believe, Franciscan University here in Ohio, and other companies who have sued the federal government over this interpretation of Obamacare. And so the Greens, because Hobby Lobby is such a big and well-known company, they've been kind of like the poster child for this effort. And so what happened was is that right before the end of the year, The case, which is going up through the courts, was brought to the United States Supremes, and they were asking for an injunction against the administration. The case is Hobby Lobby versus Kathleen Sebelius, who is the
Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Yeah. Exactly, thank you. But they brought this case asking for an injunction to keep them from being forced, as they are going to be, because we're now in 2013 and things are getting implemented, to require them to have to provide to their employees and, in one sense, pay for insurance coverage for abortions and abortifacients. Well, Judge Sonia Sotomayor basically refused to give them the injunction. Now, it's interesting because in other cases, Chuck, there have been injunctions or exemptions made. I think Domino's Pizza actually got one.
Could be.
And a couple of others. But for Hobby Lobby, who are evangelical Christians who run their company just like Chick-fil-A does on Christian principles, nope, we can't do that. And so now that they couldn't get that injunction to protect them from getting hit with this, because, and David Green and his wife Barbara have come out publicly and said it, we are not going to follow this law. Period. Don't care what the courts say. We don't care what anybody says. It is violating our liberty of conscience, our fundamental religious beliefs that human life is sacred. And so they're just not going to provide it.
And the fine is draconian.
Well, it's $1.3 million per day.
And it started already this last Tuesday.
It started last Tuesday. That would be on January 1, 2013. They are now exposed. Now, Sonia Sotomayor issued her decree, which, if you're interesting, Chuck, kicks up and one U.S. Supreme Court justice gets to say, no, you can't have the injunction. That's, first of all, I think is constitutionally questionable.
That's one of those rules that courts lay down that when those requests come in, there's usually a rotation.
Yes, there's usually a rotation.
The way it works is you're basically chosen at random. And, of course, it's interesting that the Greens at random picked the worst possible. Maybe Ruth Bader Ginsburg may have been worse. But then again, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has, believe it or not, come out on some constitutional issues and issued some surprising rulings.
Yeah, we've talked about that on previous programs.
So you never know what you're going to get. But Sonia Sotomayor, who, when she was appointed, it was said of her that she wasn't exactly the greatest legal mind ever on the court.
Yes.
And I have not read the decision. I'm sure that her reasons were, shall we say, questionable, knowing what her judicial philosophy is.
Well, it could very well have been that. But the most egregious thing is not so much what Sotomayor did in denying them the injunction so that it exposed them to these huge fines, which in and of themselves, Chuck, is unconstitutional. But it's what the Justice Department's attorneys, the attorneys for Kathleen Sebelius, Department of Health and Human Services, so the administration's attorneys, when they came in to argue against why they shouldn't get an injunction, they made a claim, Charles, that I think is worth unpacking here.
Yes.
And the claim that the attorneys for the Obama administration made in this case are, first and foremost, that Americans lose their First Amendment rights when they form a corporation and engage in commerce. So in other words, to exercise one of your pre-amendment fundamental rights, which is the pursuit of happiness, you give up your right of free exercise of your religion, according to Obama's attorneys.
Which is an absurdity on its face.
Well, it must not be too absurd because it was this part of this argument which caused Sotomayor to not grant them the exemption.
Now, let's go back and talk about another Supreme Court case just for a minute. I can't remember the name of the decision, but it was the decision that had to do with freedom of speech and corporations in election contributions. What's the name of that case?
Oh, that's Citizens United.
That's exactly the opposite of the finding of the Supreme Court in the Citizens United case.
It is, which means that they may be trying to set up a precedent line to go after Citizens United.
Okay, but the Supreme Court's already ruled on it. Are they going to overturn themselves in the very next term?
It wouldn't surprise me in the least bit if it meets their social goals. See, that's the whole point here, Chuck. The Obama administration has some social goals that they're trying to set out because numerous corporations, including big ones like Google and others, received exemptions from these fines under Obamacare. But yet, David Green and Hobby Lobby, because they're self-consciously and upfront Christian about what they do, they're being taken to the woodshed and told, and the argument which was upheld by Sonia Mayorga's decision was that you lose your right to exercise your religion when you form a corporation. They said that a person's Christianity cannot be carried out through activities he engages in through an incorporated business. Really?
Really? Then why is the Institute for Principled Policy a corporation?
Because we're carrying out our Christian principles through what we do. Why is my for-profit company, Principled Policy Consulting, guess what I'm doing, ladies and gentlemen?
Right.
I am exercising my religious beliefs through my for-profit business.
I am also incorporated in my business. The fact is that if I make no bones about it, I don't have it up on my website as a Christian company and all that stuff, because I frankly don't think that you should use that as a commercial tool for promotion. So if somebody asks me, oh, you're a Christian, aren't you? Yes, I am, and we run this company according to Christian principle.
Yes.
So can you, as an incorporated entity, operate your business from a Christian principle and espouse Christian values?
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, well, Camp American is incorporated, and we certainly do that as well.
That's right. Now, but the argument by Acting Assistant Attorney General Stuart Delery, who's working for the Obama administration, was that because Hobby Lobby is a for-profit secular employer, and as he says, a secular entity, now get this, this is a lovely little logical sleight of hand. Hobby Lobby is a for-profit secular employer, and a secular entity, by definition, does not exercise religion.
It's the old switcheroo.
It's
bait and switch. The fact is that Hobby Lobby is not a secular employer, as by their per their declaration, they are a Christian employer. Does that mean that everybody that works there is a Christian? No.
No, not everybody who goes to church is a Christian.
No, and in fact, Barry, but that's part of the deal of being a Christian business is that you partly practice the gospel by hiring people who need work but aren't necessarily Christian.
Right, and you're not sitting there telling them that they have to be able to quote the catechism before they can start punching in for the day. But you are saying that we believe in giving people value, we believe in equal measures, we believe in equal weights, we believe in just compensation. We believe in closing on Sundays so that our employees can honor the Lord on the Sabbath. And that's what they do, Chuck. That's
exactly.
And that's what they say.
It has to do with the fact that man is the image bearer of God, no matter what his belief system, the color of his skin, where he was born, whether he's a citizen or not. He is an image bearer of God, and therefore you essentially provide, you work the gospel out throughout the world, by providing, helping to provide those people to provide for their families and show them the love of Christ by paying them a decent wage and giving them the things that they should have. That does not include using your corporation's money to enable them to have abortions.
Right. Now, Chuck, I know we're probably running a little short on time here because I want to get to the second argument. We want to get to the second argument that Delery and the Obama administration made. Folks, we're going to be posting up an article about this by Terrence Jeffrey from CNSnews.com. But here's his take on it. He said that basically the second argument that they made to justify them to act against their faith is very sweeping in its approach. It says the administration argues it can force a person to act against his religion so long as the coercion is done under the authority of a law that's neutral and generally applicable. But the point is, Chuck, I think that that's a very dangerous point of the spear to stand on, if you get my drift, for the administration, because neutral and generally applicable, then why did so many organizations, including labor unions and others, get exemptions from the outworkings of this law prior to its implementation?
Yeah, so much for secularity have anything to do with getting an exemption. How many entities were given exemptions up front? It was a bunch.
Oh, it's incredible, which I believe will strike specifically at this whole idea about it being generally applicable and neutral, because winners and losers have already been picked. Now, Jeffrey kind of nutshells it. He says, in other words, as long as the law was not written specifically to persecute Christians as Christians, the government can use that law to persecute Christians.
Yeah, we're out of time, but I would just want to make a comment that you said something about balancing on a spike. You know, this is like laying down on a bed of nails. You can lay on a bed of nails, but if you lay down on just one, it's going to go through you.
It's going to hurt. That's right.
So that's partly what we have going on here. Ladies and gentlemen, join us again when we continue this study tomorrow for another Principles and Policy.
And go shop at Hobby Lobby.
And have a Chick-fil-A
while you're doing it.
After you're done.